It may not always seem that way, but it is a wonderful world, a world of possibilities. I'm Mary Muckle.
And I'm Elena Banta. We're delighted to have the lovely and talented Lillian Flowers joining us once again. Welcome to the show, Lillian.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
During this hour, we share information on a variety of topics, such as science and technology, finance, nutrition, health, entertainment, the arts, and current events. Today, we'll talk about the power of gratitude and mindfulness. We'll share some ideas on how to improve our system for presidential elections, and a little of this and that. We'll have prose and poetry by O. Henry, Robert Frost, Jamie White, Gwendolyn Brooks, and Emily Dickinson, as well as a short play by Don Nigro about turkeys. We'll also have another episode of Mary's World and the Misadventures of Mrs. Ambrose, Church Organist. And last, but certainly not least, we'll have some jokes and a variety of silliness to leave you laughing. Also, at the end of the show, we'll give you a telephone number to call so that you can give us some feedback. Sound good? Stay tuned.
So, ladies, my birthday is coming up. And when it gets close to my birthday, I dig this column out because I need to stay humble, sort of.
Sort of.
There's a lot of good no-nonsense advice, no matter what your age. And it was written by Regina Brett, 90 years old, of the Plain Dealer in Cleveland, Ohio. And she says, "To celebrate growing older, I once wrote the 45 life lessons. The 45 lessons life taught me. It is the most requested column I've ever written. My odometer rolled over to 90 in August, so here is the column once more. 1. Life isn't fair, but is still good. 2. When in doubt, just take the next small step. 3. Life is too short to waste time hating anyone. 4. Your job won't take care of you when you're sick. Your friends and parents will. Stay in touch. 5. Pay off your credit cards every month. 6. You don't have to win every argument. Agree to disagree. 7. Cry with someone. It's more healing than crying alone. 8. It's okay to get angry with God. He can take it. 9. Save for retirement starting with your first paycheck. 10. When it comes to chocolate, resistance is futile. 11. Make peace with your past so it won't screw up the present. 12. It's okay to let your children see you cry. 13. Don't compare your life with others. You have no idea what their journey is all about. 14. If a relationship has to be a secret, you should not be in it. 15. Everything can change in the blink of an eye, but don't worry, God never blinks. 16. Take a deep breath. It calms the mind. 17. Get rid of anything that isn't useful, beautiful, or joyful. 18. Whatever doesn't kill you really does make you stronger. 19. It's never too late to have a happy childhood, but the second one is up to you and no one else. 20. When it comes to going after what you love in life, don't take no for an answer. 21. Burn the candles, use the nice sheets, and wear the fancy lingerie. Don't save it for a special occasion. Today is special. 22. Over-prepare, then go with the flow. 23. Be eccentric now. Don't wait for old age to wear purple. 24. The most important sex organ is the brain. 25. No one is in charge of your happiness but you. 26. Frame every so-called disaster with these words. In 5 years, will this really matter? 27. Always choose life. 28. Forgive everyone everything. 29. What other people think of you is none of your business. 30. Time heals almost everything. Give time. 31. However good or bad a situation is, it will change. 32. Don't take yourself so seriously. No one else does. 33. Believe in miracles. 34. God loves you because of God, of who God is, not because of anything you did or didn't do. 35. Don't audit life. Show up and make the most of it now. 36. Growing old beats the alternative, dying young. 37. Your children get only one childhood. 38. All that truly matters in the end is that you are loved and that you loved. 39. Get outside every day. Miracles are waiting everywhere. 40. If we all threw our problems into a pile and saw everyone else's, we'd grab ours back. 41. Envy is a waste of time. You already have all you need. 42. The best is yet to come. 43. No matter how you feel, get up, dress up, and show up. 44. Yield. 45. Life isn't tied with a bow, but it's still a gift. Thank you.
Any one of those in particular stand out?
The best is yet to come, maybe, because our show is still going on.
That's a good one, too. Okay.
Want to stay positive? Want to feel good about yourself, too? Here are easy suggestions to help you do just that. And this is an article called The Goodness of Gratitude, and it's from the Reader's Digest, October issue 2016. Last year, I baked brownies for strangers to whom I was grateful. They thanked me for my gesture, and that was it. An exchange so simple, you'll be surprised at the complexity of its rewards. It started when I called 911 after finding my partner unconscious on the floor. Within minutes, a police cruiser arrived, followed by an ambulance filled with first responders who whisked my partner to the emergency room, where he received the critical care he needed. A week later, I wrote thank you notes and dropped them off at the police station and the firehouse with batches of still warm brownies. After the firefighters thanked me for delivering the gifts, I drove away feeling both light and happy. The natural high is increasingly understood to be a benefit of gratitude. I felt good both because of my good deed and because I'd been touched by selfless people who expected nothing in return. Research confirms that performing acts of kindness and sharing thankful thoughts have many possible effects on mood and health. People who express gratitude lower their blood pressure, get better quality sleep, improve their relationships, decrease their depression levels, and are less affected by pain, says Willibald Rauch, a psychology professor at the University of Zurich, who researches how factors like gratitude and humor affect perception. Gratitude is among the top 5 predictors of happiness. The ticket to a bigger life. When you feel thankful for things you've received or something that has happened, that's gratitude. You never feel it in a vacuum. You are clear who or what is responsible, whether that's a loved one, a stranger, or a higher power. Gratitude is how you relate to others, Rauch says, when you see yourself in connection with things larger than yourself. He and other researchers believe this understanding of a reliance on others is becoming more difficult today. With commercial and social media, everything makes the younger generation feel that they are the center of the universe, said Tamiko Zabluth, founder of the London-based etiquette consulting firm Minding Matters. If it's all about them, why thank others? If true, this would be a disturbing health trend, because thanking others in heartfelt ways, or even better, helping them, carries long-lasting effects. Canadian researchers found that people who wrote thank you letters or performed good deeds for a 6-week period decreased their pain, upped their energy, accomplished more every day, and improved their mental health for up to 6 months. And you can reap these benefits at any age. Swedish researchers have found that people ages 77 to 90 who choose to be thankful are less likely to dwell on their chances of growing frail. When they can't change something, they choose gratitude and focus on what's good. Walking on their own legs, still being alive, and living by themselves, says study author Helena Horder, a researcher at the University of Gothenburg in Sweden. Gratitude is contagious as well. Those who are helped are more likely to play kindness forward. One study found that when someone is thanked, it more than doubles his or her chances of being helpful again, likely because he or she enjoys feeling socially valued. Zabluth likes the reaction she gets when she rewards a stranger who holds the door open at Starbucks with his rightful place in line in front of her. The look on his face is shock, Zabluth says. He'll be nicer to the cashier and the next person he sees at work. There's a trickle-down effect. This give and take can also deepen intimacy. When your partner regularly expresses appreciation for you, you're more likely to return the feeling and stay committed. In one study, expressions of gratitude make partners feel more responsible for one another's well-being and are more satisfied with their relationships. Train a grateful brain. If you aren't particularly grateful now, you can learn to be. People who keep journals in which they write down 3 positive things that happen to them each day cultivate health-inducing thankfulness. At first, people may have difficulty recognizing the good things that occur, Rauch says. But if everything evening you write down them down, you experience those things more intensively, he says. Gradually, your brain gets trained to a more appreciative mode. When Rauch instructs patients to keep a gratitude journal, they often keep it up later, he says, on their own. It becomes a book of nice memories.
Good advice.
Yeah, thank you. So, Mary and Elena both know that I have never been accused of being a wallflower. And sometimes I have been accused of not being in my right mind. So, of course, I had to combine these two when I discovered this mental health article, that spiritualityhealth.com, and I knew I had to be the one to read it on air. It's called Mindfulness for the Wallflower. Meditations is at the core of a new generation of treatments for social anxiety. Kevin Scherning, a 48-year-old film and video editor, doesn't simply dislike social gatherings. He finds them overwhelming. I basically feel claustrophobic, he says. I have to get out of there. An estimated 22 million people in the United States have social anxiety disorder, an intense and disabling fear of being judged or humiliated in social situations. Living with this disorder can make day-to-day social interactions a painful challenge. Even the prospect of meeting a friend for lunch might be daunting. The most common treatment for this problem has been cognitive behavioral therapy, which teaches the socially anxious to challenge and question their own negative thinking. But a new generation of researchers is finding that mindfulness training can help people like Kevin overcome this debilitating condition. Mindfulness is paying attention on purpose without trying to get some goal or to escape anything, exclaimed Steve Flowers, the author of Mindful Path Through Shyness. Growing in popularity and use, mindfulness is often learned through a meditation process in which one observes an experience, starting with something simple, like breathing, without trying to change, control, or judge it. That mindful attitude, once mastered, can then be brought to any activity, whether making small talk at the post office or giving a major presentation at work. But for those with social anxiety disorder, everyday life is anything but mindful. Daniel Giovandoni, 26, says his fears about how people might perceive him would cause him to delay replying to important emails for weeks at a time. And of course, the longer he waited, the more self-conscious and anxious he became. I'm worried that people are wondering, he says. It snowballs. Learning to work through fears rather than avoid them is one of the core skills of a group therapy program developed by Jan Fleming and Nancy Kukowski, the authors of the Mindfulness and Acceptance Workbook for Social Anxiety and Shyness. For example, says Kukowski, instead of ending a conversation as soon as they feel themselves breaking into a nervous sweat, group members learn to notice the sweating, be more accepting of it, and finish the conversation. A 2009 study conducted by the authors found the treatment reduced both social anxiety and depression. Other studies have found that mindfulness training activates areas of the brain that help to manage emotions. The power of a mindfulness practice, however, may come in the realization that one can live a meaningful life even with social anxiety. Scherning, who participated in Fleming and Kukowski's group, say that he still feels nervous in social situations, but now feels compassion, not judgment, for himself, and sees that, quote, I can be more personal, I can be more the person I want to be, unquote. And this is written by Jason Dwall. There's also some tips for managing shyness mindfully. Try these five tips for coping with social anxiety. 1. Accept your shyness instead of fighting it. You may get nervous in social situations, but that's okay. Learn to appreciate this as part of yourself. 2. Focus on your whole experience. Instead of just scrutinizing your own behavior, pay attention to your surroundings, the conversation at hand, or whatever you're doing. 3. Recognize that you are not alone. Over 22 million people in the United States live with this challenge. 4. Cultivate self-compassion. Experiencing social anxiety doesn't lessen your worth or value as a person. And lastly, remember that this moment is just one moment. Anxieties and fears, especially in social situations, will come and go. They won't last forever. Thanks.
Yeah, it's good to remember. They don't last forever. Unlike the recent presidential campaign, which seemed like it was going to last forever, this bitterly contentious, almost endless campaigning between two unpopular candidates. There just has to be a better way to do things. Well, this is an article from the November 14th, 2016 issue from of Time Magazine. The article was written by Kate Samuelson, and it tells us about some ideas from other countries that could improve U.S. elections. One is election day registration. Registering to vote in the U.S. is confusing and inconsistent across states. Currently, only 13 allow same-day voter registration, but making that uniform across the U.S., as Canada does, could lead to a higher turnout. Another is automatic voter registration. Oregon became the first state to automatically enroll eligible citizens as voters last year. As a consequence, the monthly number of registrations in 2016 is three times what it was in 2012. Auto-enrolling all voters, as France and Switzerland do, could make elections more accessible. And this is one of my favorites, shorter campaign seasons.
Hear, hear.
Little wonder many Americans were sick of the candidates. This election lasted nearly 600 days by the time the polls closed on November 18th. That's almost a year and a half. By comparison, Canada's longest campaign season in recent history lasted 11 weeks. In Japan, campaigns last just 12 days. Wow. Okay, and there's also a none of the above. India and Greece, among other nations, have a none-of-the-above option on ballots, allowing voters to indicate disapproval without sitting out the election. In the U.S., only the state of Nevada has this option. And there's ranked voting. Australia and Ireland let voters rank their choices. This would allow Americans to vote for a third-party candidate, knowing their second choice might get the vote in later counts. And then there is mandatory voting. More than 22 countries around the world, including Uruguay and Australia, have mandatory voting in which eligible voters can be penalized if they do not cast their ballot. I don't know about that one. And the last is weekend elections. Some argue that holding elections on the weekend, as Brazil, Greece, and many other countries do, rather than on a Tuesday, would make it easier for more Americans to visit their polling stations. And that's that. So maybe there will be some changes. One can only hope. What's next?
There's something else going on in your world, Mary. What have you got for us today?
Nope. Wait a minute.
I did that.
Okay. Okay. Well, we've got a little glitch in the process here. Sorry about that. We're going to hear a little of this and that, and that comes from various issues of The Week magazine. The first item is about bachelor parties. Most bachelor parties end with foggy memories, but Mitchell Craddock will never forget his celebration. Craddock and his friends were staying at a rented cabin in the Tennessee woods when a hungry dog appeared at their door. The group fed the dog and then followed her into the woods where they found her eight newborn pups. The men got right to work, bathing the puppies and spending their beer fund on kibble. Each groomsman went home with a pup, and Craddock's fiancée was delighted to meet her new pet. "Now it's our joke that for any of our big life events," Craddock said, "we'll get a dog."
too.
Yeah. Okay. Police issued NASCAR driver Gale Earnhardt Jr. a warning for speeding on his way to watch a race at the Texas Motor Speedway. When asked how fast he was going, Earnhardt replied, "Not fast enough." A Boston University study found that medieval peasants in 13th century Europe typically took 150 days off from work per year to celebrate holidays and other festivals. In 2015, the average American had just 16.2 vacation days. I'd love to know how they figured out how many holidays medieval peasants had, but anyway. Donald Trump's victory sparked so much traffic to the country's immigration website that it crashed for hours. Online searches for Canada and move to Canada soared into the millions. Hollywood issued a flood of despairing tweets over Donald Trump's victory. Quote, "About to throw up," actor Billy Eichner posted. "Xanax," tweeted Mia Farrow. Ellen producer Andy Lastner posted, quote, "I'm on hold with Air Canada." let's see. French researchers revealed that poor driving habits run in families, with 75% of motorists who admitted to experiencing road rage saying that they had witnessed their parents hurling insults from behind the wheel. Okay. A Buffalo woman filed a federal lawsuit to stop the presidential election because both candidates' characters fell, quote, far below a presidential standard. Louise Nolly said she got an okay from God to try to save the country. Okay, what's next? Oh, and then more election stuff. North Carolina eliminated 27 polling places for this election and cut hours at other sites, producing long lines that required voters to wait hours. Other Republican-controlled states freed of Voting Rights Act restrictions also dramatically cut the number of polling places, including Texas, 403 poll closures. Louisiana had 103 closures. Alabama closed 66. And Arizona, which closed 140 of its 200 sites. Well, okay. There's always something interesting going on in your world, Mary. What have you got for us today?
Okay. Ever lose anything? I am always losing something. Things I lose or items are mine that are in the house. Never buy a house with a stand-up attic, big basement, and deep closets. These encourage hobby pileups. I love books, mysteries, biographies, and any types of short stories. I also play the piano, so I have a lot of music books, too. I have a workbench full of music in the basement. Where did I find the last piece of music I was looking for? At the bottom of the pile. I have a paperback that has Thanksgiving stories and Christmas stories in it. I've had it a long time. Can I find it now? No way. Too many piles. I remember in school when we had to write an essay about what we should change about ourselves and read it out loud. Mine was called, "I Need to Be More Organized." Well, guess what? Still working on it. And now the stories of the misadventures of Mrs. Ambrose, church organist. It is fall now, and the colorful leaves are falling down in bunches. Mrs. Ambrose has decided to walk to church instead of taking her skateboard because some people have raked their leaves on various parts of the sidewalk. Too hard to navigate. She had bought a new fall hat and is wearing it for the first time today. She notices the wind is picking up and wonders if it's going to rain. And with that thought, a huge gust of wind comes forth and Mrs. Ambrose's hat soars into the wind like a flying saucer and lands on a branch of a big tree next to the church. No one is here yet, so there's no one around to help her. She thinks of a quick fix and goes into the church and borrows a long length of rope, runs back, and using her former Girl Scout training, throws the rope over a branch of the tree and besides climbing up the tree. People are arriving at church now. They come around the corner from the parking lot and stop in their tracks when they see Mrs. Ambrose climbing the tree. Mr. Cooper uses his camera phone and takes a picture. Mr. Landers, who is a photographer, also takes some pictures. Mr. Landers is not only a photographer, but the most available senior man in the church, and he's the only heir to a small corporate fortune. He makes his way to Mrs. Ambrose and says, "You seem to be a woman of many talents, athlete, church organist, and fortune teller." She smiles a sheepish smile, and they go into the church together, but not before a large clap of applause from Mrs. Ambrose. She puts her new hat back on her head, and she and Mr. Landers walk into the church together. She has a complete blush on her face. It is almost time for church to begin, and Mrs. Ambrose has flying fingers of the key and is elated from all the attention she has gotten this morning. She begins the opening hymn, "How Brightly Beams the Morning Star." The service continues. Pastor Johnson reads from the scriptures and says a couple of prayers. The congregation follows with a responsive reading. Then Pastor Johnson announces that a missionary from Nigeria is here to talk about his country. He asks him to come to the front now. He has a goat with him. He explains to people in Nigeria about the chick and sheep and goat farms. Then he announces a Sunday school project for each class will put change in a bank, so when they get enough money together, they can send some animals to help them. The missionary runs back to his seat. The pastor gives a sermon. Today, Mrs. Albuck has volunteered to sing a solo this morning. The window and the side doors are often open because it's stuffy today. She has picked a song called "Beautiful Peace." The minute she starts the song, a fire truck goes by with a very loud siren, and she starts over. This time, everything is fine until the end, when the goat gives out with a loud baa and comes running into the church from the right side and proceeds to march across as though he knew where he was going. The missionary comes in frantically, and everyone points to the left door. Everyone is laughing. Pastor Johnson gives the sermon. It is now time for the second hymn. Pastor Johnson has to nudge Mrs. Ambrose to have her start playing as she and Mr. Landers are busy twinkling their eyes at each other. The service resumes. The kids are dismissed for Sunday school. Mrs. Barker has 6 boys, 10-year-olds in her class, including the Cooper twins. The lesson for today is Moses and the parting of the Red Sea. Billy Cooper asks actually an intelligent question. Why do they call it the Red Sea? And Mrs. Barker, whose hobby is geology, gives him a detailed answer, and he actually listens to all of it. She even tells the class about her extensive rock collection and diggings. Sunday school and church have ended. Everyone has piled in the coffee hour. The kids are all excited because they're having cider and donuts. Frankie is more excited than anyone because he is using his donut as a hockey puck in the corner of the room. Billy has disappeared elsewhere, and Mr. and Mrs. Cooper decides to go home. They find Billy digging holes in the churchyard. Mrs. Cooper blows her top. Billy explains, Mrs. Barker explained geology to him, and he is looking for good digs. Meanwhile, back inside the church, Mrs. Landers is helping Mrs. Ambrose dust the organ. The question is now, will the organ dust bring romance to Mrs. Ambrose?
Well, we can only hope so.
Yeah. Can't wait till the next installment.
I know.
Everything goes on with her. She has quite a life, that one.
Poor Mrs. Ambrose.
Good things and bad things.
Okay, I've got some November poetry for you. The first one is called November Rain, and it was written by Jamie White, who is a contemporary American poet. The rain is sliding down my windowsill ever so peacefully and calmly. The air is crisp, and it has a bit of a cutting chill to it. The leaves are blowing around in swirls, their colors hitting the rain puddles. November rain is here at last. Ever so comforting is the thunderstorm as I slip into my bed with a book. I read to the beats of the thunder while the rain pours down my window. My mind eases and I relax to pitter-pats that I hear, for the November rain is here. And the next poet, the next poet is a poem is called The Crazy Woman, and it's by Gwendolyn Brooks. She is a 20th century Afro-American poet, born in 1917 and died in the year 2000. She was the recipient of many awards, including the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry in 1950. She was the first African-American woman to receive that award, and her poem is The Crazy Woman. I shall not sing a May song. A May song should be gay. I'll wait until November and sing a song of gray. I'll wait until November. That is the time for me. I'll go out in the frosty dark and sing most terribly. And all the little people will stare at me and say, that is the crazy woman who would not sing in May. And the last one is by Emily Dickinson, and it's entitled How Happy I Was If I Could Forget. Dickinson was a 19th century American poet. She was born in 1830 and died in 1886. Although part of a prominent family with strong ties to the community, Dickinson lived much of her life in reclusive isolation. Considered an eccentric by locals, she developed a noted penchant for white clothing and became known for her reluctance to greet guests or, later in life, to even leave her bedroom. Dickinson never married, and most friendships between her and others depended entirely upon correspondence. And here's her poem. How happy I was if I could forget to remember how sad I am. Would be an easy adversity, but the recollecting of bloom keeps making November difficult till I, who was almost bold, lose my way like a little child and perish of the cold.
Interesting.
Okay, so beautiful. That's it for November poetry. Next,
I have a story.
We've got a short play. Thanksgiving is coming, and many of us are thinking about the traditional turkey dinner. But what are turkeys thinking about? No, it's not Thanksgiving. For three turkeys by the name of Bob, Penny, and George, it's corn cobs. We'd like to read a short play by Don Nigro entitled Three Turkeys Waiting for Corn Cobs. Lillian will read the role of Bob, Mary will take the part of Penny, and I will read the role of George. The setting is somebody's backyard near the woods.
Have they thrown out the corn cobs yet, George?
Not yet, Bob.
I want some corn cobs, George. I love corn cobs.
We all love corn cobs, Bob. We're turkeys.
I like corn better than anything.
Yesterday, you liked bugs better than anything.
I like bugs, but I like corn more. Except sometimes when I get really good bugs. But mostly, I like corn. I mean, sometimes bugs can get away, but corn almost never gets away. Corn doesn't move like bugs. You can trust corn.
Bob, did you ever think maybe there's more to life than corn?
Sure.
Like what?
There's bugs, there's corn, and then there's bugs.
But don't you ever think maybe life is more than just corn and bugs?
I'm confused, Penny. You mean like trees?
No, I don't mean like trees, Bob.
We're turkeys, Penny. We love corn and bugs. What else is there?
I've always wanted to learn to play the saxophone.
The saxophone?
Yes.
You've always wanted to play the saxophone?
Yes.
Penny, turkeys can't play the saxophone.
Why not? Because I think that's just an example of prejudice. Give me one good reason why a turkey can't play the saxophone.
We don't have any fingers. You need fingers to play the saxophone.
We have feet. Maybe we can play the saxophone with our feet.
I don't think so.
Have you ever tried?
No, Penny. I have never tried to play the saxophone with my feet.
Then how do you know you can't?
Oh, this is getting too deep for me.
But we don't have any lips.
I've got lips.
You don't have any lips, Penny. You're a turkey. Turkeys don't have lips.
Then what's this thing on my face?
It's your beak, Penny. You can't blow into a saxophone with a beak. To blow into a saxophone, you need lips.
I don't care what you're saying. I'm going to play the saxophone. I don't know exactly how yet, but I am. And someday when I'm a world-famous turkey saxophone player, you're going to look through somebody's window at their television, and you're going to see me playing the saxophone. And you'll say, look, Bob, there's Penny, and she's playing the saxophone.
Have they put out the corn cobs out yet, George?
Not yet, Bob.
I feel the same way about the saxophone that Bob feels about corn cobs.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
You can't compare saxophones with corn cobs.
Why not?
Because a corn cob is an entirely different thing from a saxophone. You can't eat a saxophone, and you can't blow on a corn cob. Oh, well, I suppose you can blow on a corn cob if you want to, but it doesn't make any sound.
How do you know that, George? You tried to blow on a corn cob? Have you ever tried to play a saxophone? Have you ever tried to do anything but eat corn and bugs? You're such a negative turkey.
Penny, where are you going to find a saxophone? We live in the woods.
There might be a saxophone tree.
I've been in this woods my whole life, and I've never once seen a saxophone tree.
Just because you've never seen a saxophone tree doesn't mean there isn't one somewhere in the woods.
Do they have waffle trees? Because I had some waffle once, and they were really good.
Waffles don't grow on trees, Bob. You've got to make waffles.
I never made any waffles. I found them under a tree. I think it was the tree over there.
Somebody threw them out there with the corn cobs, Bob.
I'm going off to look for a saxophone tree.
Penny, that's stupid.
Don't call me stupid. I'm a turkey with a dream, and my dream is to find a saxophone tree and pick myself a saxophone and learn to play it with my feet. Call me crazy, but that's my dream.
Penny, you're never going to find a saxophone tree.
If Bob can find waffles, I can find a saxophone tree.
You're just going to get lost. You're going to get separated from the flock. And do you know what happens when you get separated from the flock? You become flockless. You have nobody to gobble with. You just walk and walk, and you're alone forever. And slowly you start to go mad. Remember what happened to Nellie? She set off one day looking for something, and we never saw her again.
That's not going to happen to me.
How do you know, Penny? How do you know anything?
I don't think Nellie's lost. I think she found a saxophone tree. She's probably playing the saxophone under that tree right now. And that's where I'm going. And you can't stop me. Goodbye, George. Goodbye, Bob. I hope you find more waffles.
Goodbye, Penny. Penny went away.
Yes.
Nellie went away, and then Penny went away, and I think some other turkeys went away before that. But I don't remember too good. What's the matter, George? You look sad. Are you thinking about waffles? Do you miss Nellie? Do you miss Penny? Is that why you look so sad? Maybe we should have been more supportive about the saxophone tree, do you think, George? George, do you think I could learn to play the saxophone?
I don't know, Bob. Maybe.
Hey, George.
What is it, Bob?
George, what's a saxophone?
Here come the corn cobs, Bob. The end.
The end. That's cute. Story.
Okay, and what's next?
It's poems from Robert Frost. And Robert Frost was born March 26, 1874. He died January 29th, 1963. He is widely regarded as America's greatest poet. Two of his most important works are The Road Not Taken and Ezra Pound. The ones I'm going to read today is called My November Guest. My sorrow, when she's here with me, thinks these dark days of autumn rain are beautiful as days can be. She loves the bare of the withered trees. She stalks the sudden pasture lane. Her pleasure will not let me stay. She talks and I am fain to list. She's glad the birds are gone away. She's glad her simple worsted gray is silver now with clinging mist. The desolate, deserted trees, the faded earth, the heavy sky, the beauty she so truly sees. She thinks I have no eyes for these and vexes me for reason why. Not yesterday I learned to know the love of bare November days before the coming of the snow. But it were vain to tell her so. There are better for her praises. And then I have... In hardwood groves, the same leaves over and over again. They fall from giving shade to make one brown of texture of faded brown. And the second one is gathering leaves. Space tapes out leaves no better than spoons. The bags are full of leaves and are light as balloons. And make a great noise of rustling all day, like rabbit and deer running away. But the mountains I embrace elude my brace, falling over my arms and into my face. I may unload and unload again until I fill the whole shed. And that what then have what I then? Nothing for to wait, and since they grew duller from contract with earth, next to nothing for color. Next to nothing for use, but a crop is a crop, and who's to say where the harvest shall stop? And the last one is a leaf trader. I've been treading on leaves all day until I am autumn tired. God knows all the color of form the leaves I have trodden on and mired. Perhaps I have forth too much strength and too much fear from fear. I have safely trodden under foots of leaves another year. All summer long they were overhead, more lifted than I. To come to their final place in earth, they had to pass me by. All summer long I thought I heard them threatening under their breath. And when they came to it, with a will to carry me to them till death. That's the end of that.
Okay. Well, moving on, our comedy segment this week is brought to you by WeatherBest. You've all heard the saying, everyone talks about the weather, but no one does anything about it. Well, my friends, that's all about to change. Those good folks at the Tiny Teeth Corporation decided to do something about it. They've come up with an amazingly simple solution. It's called WeatherBest. Thanks to WeatherBest, you will no longer have to endure winters that are not cold enough or summers that are not hot enough. As for all that green stuff sprouting up in the spring, gone. You want more leaves falling in autumn? You got it. WeatherBest is an invisible plastic dome which will cover not just you, not just your house, but your entire zip code. And under this dome, the weather is just as you like it. You might be wondering what to do when the neighbors start complaining. Not to worry, they'll never know it's you. And eventually, like the good citizens they are, they'll get used to it. So don't wait another minute. Order WeatherBest now. The first 10 people to visit our website will receive a free, easily installed WeatherBest dome. You can have it your way. Go to weatherbest.net for more information. Okay, what's next?
Well, I'm hungry.
Me too.
Well, I'm not the world's greatest cook, so I had to do a lot of research to find the most perfect recipe for cooking a turkey for this Thanksgiving. So here it is. How to cook a turkey. Step 1, go buy a turkey. Step 2, take a drink of whiskey, scotch, or Jack Daniels. Step 3, put turkey in the oven. Step 4, take another 2 drinks of whiskey. Step 5, set the degree at 75 ovens. Step 6, take 3 more whiskeys of drink. Step 7, again, turn on the oven on. Step 8, take 4 whisks of jinky. Step 9, turk the basty. Step 10, whiskey and another bottle of Get. Step 11, stick a turkey in the thermometer. Step 12, glass yourself a pour of whiskey. Step 13, bake the whiskey for 4 hours. Step 14, take the oven out of the turkey. Step 15, floor the turkey up off the pick. Step 16, turk the carvey. And 17, get yourself another scotch of bottle. 18, set the table and pour yourself another glass of turkey. And step 19, bless the thing, pass the hand, eat out. If I wasn't hungry before, I am now.
Boy, that just made me lose my appetite. Oh, I love it. Okay, well, as if that wasn't bad enough, we have now come to the moment you've all been waiting for or possibly dreading. It's time for what we think are the world's worst jokes.
So why can't you take a turkey to church?
They use foul language.
Why was the Thanksgiving soup so expensive?
It had 24 carrots.
Oh, what happened when the turkey got into a fight?
He got the stuffing knocked out of him.
Oh, what do you get when you cross a turkey with a banjo?
A turkey that can pluck itself.
I wonder what you'd get if you crossed it with a saxophone.
No.
What did the turkey say to a man who tried to shoot it?
Liberty, equality, and bad aim for all.
Hear, hear. Who doesn't eat on Thanksgiving?
A turkey, because it's always stuffed.
Wow. And what did baby corn say to mama corn?
Where's popcorn?
If the pilgrims were alive today, what would they be most famous for?
Their age.
Got it. Why do pilgrims' pants keep falling down?
Because their belt buckles are on their hats.
Why did they let the turkey join the band?
Because he had drumsticks.
What did the mother turkey say to her disobedient children?
If your father could see you now, he'd turn over in his gravy.
Oh. Which side of the turkey has the most feathers?
The outside.
Good point.
It just gets worse and worse.
Why was the monster tickled when he ate the turkey?
He forgot to pluck the feathers.
Good. What do you get if you cross a turkey with an evil spirit?
A poultry geist.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. What do you get after eating way too much turkey and dressing?
Dessert.
I vote for that. Why shouldn't you look at the turkey dressing?
It makes her blush.
Aw. If April showers bring May flowers, what do May flowers bring?
Pilgrims.
Got it. When did the pilgrims first say, God bless America?
The first time they heard America sneeze.
Why should you never talk to a turkey?
Because it's bad to use foul language.
What sound does a space turkey make?
Hubble, hubble, hubble.
What is a pilgrim's favorite kind of music?
Plymouth rock.
Good one. What did the turkey say to the turkey hunter?
Quack, quack, quack.
What was the best way to stuff a turkey?
Take them out for pizza and ice cream.
You can take me too.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
What do modern day Native Americans call a pilgrim?
Pilgrim Reaper.
Oh. What does Dracula call Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving.
I'm getting hungry. Mm-hmm. If you call a large turkey a gobbler, what do you call a small one?
A goblet.
Oh, I like that. Why did the turkey sit on the tomahawk?
The hatchet.
Oh! What sound does a turkey's cell phone make?
Wing, wing.
What do you call a stuffed animal?
You after Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's a good one, too. What smells the best at Thanksgiving dinner?
Your nose.
What kind of vest do you wear at a Thanksgiving dinner?
A harvest.
Oh, and what do Thanksgiving and Halloween have in common?
One has gobblers, the other goblins.
Ooh. What do you get if you divide the circumference of a pumpkin by its diameter?
A pumpkin pie.
Oh, P.I., mm-hmm. huh?
P.I., yeah.
Why did the police arrest the turkey?
They suspected it of foul play.
And what's the key to a great Thanksgiving dinner?
The turkey.
Oh. What did the turkey say before it was roasted?
Boy, I'm stuffed.
What happened to the pilgrim who was shot by an Indian?
He had an arrow escape.
Oh, okay. Why do turkeys always go gobble, gobble?
Because they have bad table manners.
Whoa. What key has legs and can't open doors?
A turkey.
Ooh, why did the turkey cross the road?
It was the chicken's day off.
Oh. Well, that makes sense. Mm. Which cat discovered America?
Christopher Columbus.
What are the feathers on a turkey's wings called?
Turkey feathers.
Oh. Got it. What's the best dance to do at Thanksgiving?
The turkey trot.
Mm-hmm. What do you get when you cross a turkey with an octopus?
Enough drumsticks for Thanksgiving.
I'll vote for that. I love drumsticks.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call the age of a pilgrim?
Pilgrimage.
What kind of tan did pilgrims get at the beach?
Pura tan.
What kind of face does a pilgrim make when he's in pain?
Pilgrimace.
What do you call a pilgrim's vocabulary?
Pilgrimer.
Oh, why do turkeys gobble?
Because they never learn table manners.
And what kind of key has legs and can't open doors?
A turkey.
And how can you send a turkey through the post office?
Bird class mail.
Oh. Ooh. I didn't know they had that.
They do. They do. Yes.
That's good to know.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What happened when the turkey got into a fight?
He got the stuffing knocked out of him.
Sounds reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Why did the turkey cross the road?
Because the chicken got Thanksgiving Day off.
Smart chicken. Why did the band hire a turkey as a drummer?
He said the drumsticks.
Yep. How do you make gold soup?
Throw in 14 carrots.
Yum. What do you call a 500-pound turkey?
Sir.
I guess.
And how do little pilgrims draw pictures?
With cranberries.
Oh, why do turkeys fly? Why don't turkeys fly?
They can't afford plane tickets.
I don't think I can either.
No,
right
I
now.
Can't either.
No,
for
I
sure.
Can't either.
What's the friendliest vegetable on earth?
the sweet potato.
Oh. What's a turkey's favorite type of doll?
Gobbleheads.
Why do the Indian chief wear so many feathers?
To keep his wig warm.
Oh, and what happened to the pilgrim who was shot by an Indian?
He had an arrow escape.
Which cat discovered America?
Oh, I think we just did that.
Christopher Columbus.
Okay, and the next page is... Why did the turkey say to the man who tried to shoot... What did the turkey say to the man who tried to shoot it?
Liberty, equality, and bad aim for all.
And I think we are going to go to the next page, the last page, which is, who is not hungry at Thanksgiving?
The turkey, because he's already stuffed.
Wow. In what country is Thanksgiving ironically not celebrated?
Turkey.
Oh, that's a good one. If you call a large turkey a gobbler, what do you call a small one?
A goblet.
A goblet, yes.
Oh, we'll go through these again then. They were so good. What was the turkey suspected of?
Foul play.
What's the best way to stuff a turkey?
Serve him lots of pizza and ice cream.
And why did the turkey sit on the tomahawk?
To hatch it.
Must have hurt.
Mm-hmm.
What sound? Yes.
Yeah.
What sound does a turkey phone make?
Wing, wing.
And what do you wear to Thanksgiving dinner?
A harvest.
And what do Thanksgiving and Halloween have in common?
One gobbles, the other's goblins.
And what is a pumpkin's favorite sport?
Squash.
That's a good sport.
Oh,
good
my sport. Goodness. Well, I think that's all we have time for today. I'm Elena Banta.
And I'm Mary Muckle, coming to you from Chris Radio, your information station. Our producer has been Brian Hawkins. Tune in next week and we'll be back with more information, fiction, and new jokes. We'd love to hear from you. Any writers or poets out there? Send us your best stuff and we'll read it on the show. Stories should be no longer than 10 minutes. And please remember, keep it clean. Send all material to Brian Hawkins, Chris Radio, the Chicago Lighthouse, 1850 West Roosevelt Road, Chicago, Illinois, 60608. If you have feedback for us, please call Brian at 312-997-3687 or TTY 312-666-8874. We'd like to leave you with something to think about. Can vegetarians eat animal crackers? This has been A World of Possibilities. Thank you for listening.